This is Music Industry Insights. My name is Evan Murray. You can reach me at evan@musicindustryins.net. And I am very happy that you're here right now. Right now, experiencing my voice. So if you're having a good day, good for you. And if you're not having a good day, well, I hope I can make your day better. This podcast that you're listening to is actually super interesting. Like, what is a person who writes, you know, writes for Esquire magazine interviewing Jimmy Page and, like, you know, Metallica and Oasis and these major bands, and then also having this, like, extraordinarily unique music that she creates on her own, fused between classical and there's elements of jazz and elements of folk, you know, and like it's like this alternative folk, and it's a, while also being signed to one of China's biggest music industry companies. And she's from southern China. I'm not going to pronounce the word because I can't pronounce it properly, but all of this information is in this conversation on this podcast. My guest, her name is Lucy Chung, and she is from China, and she resides in London, England. This is a conversation about Lucy's life, about Lucy's experiences. Again, she has done major journal publication work, and quite intellectual on top of that. So, you know, talking to Lucy was a pleasure for me because she has a very wide-spanning mind. She's also very gentle with her approach. And she has done super interesting things and talked to extraordinarily interesting people. As well as, like, you know, the kickoff of her journalism career is quite interesting. And her music career is kind of unique, to say the least. Lucy is classically trained with elements of jazz in there and alternative folk. And she goes between solo and having a band. And she's done major festivals in China. She's trying to break some ground with her music career in the Western world. But I think the other thing about Lucy is I think she really does music because she can't help it. I think it's something that she does, like, say, you know, clouds lose water and it rains, or the sun rotates, you know, the earth rotates around the sun and the sun shines down on the earth. It's just something that kind of happens, like breathing. I think that's what music is for Lucy. I think that it's her, you know, it's her love, it's her feelings coming out. But I don't want her music to be overshadowed by her gigantic, enormous, humongous, you know, journal career, which obviously I just did. But yeah, it was a real pleasure to talk to Lucy, and you can gain a lot of insight out of this about someone who has multiple careers in the same industry and someone who has done something huge and famous in one aspect and is still finding their way in the other regard. So I think this podcast was worth it. I think it was a good idea to talk to Lucy, and I hope that, as always, you get something out of this, you extract what you need, and you enjoy it.
Lucy, how you doing? And can you give us a better introduction of yourself and just talk to us for a little bit about you?
Hi, Evan. It's really rainy here. I am just sitting in a garden at home in London. And yes, it's Lucy. I am originally from the south of China, Guangzhou. That's the old name, Canton, which I intend to stick to. It's just closer to my original language. I moved to England a few years ago. At the same time, I continue with my music making and my journalism work. That's Evan has already talked about briefly. Yeah. And I'm at this moment, during the last year, I'm just working on my third album, signed with the Beijing Record Company, Modern Sky.
Okay. So this is, this is some interesting information that I'm going to kind of take apart here, and I want to kind of talk to you about. So you've been living in England for how long now?
If officially, it's a few years, but few years. I think arriving, it's about 10 years.
Okay, so you're not like a stranger to Europe then?
Before that, I lived in Greece for another few years. So yeah, it's since 15 years now. So it's also work and living, work and life, they are always mingle for me, so all blended. Never really has much difference.
So you're half European. That's what I'm getting. so much of your life, you know, like time or energy or things that you're focused on is that, yeah, you're kind of half, even though you're from China, you have a very rich European experience, let's say.
But I guess the more I am in Europe, the more Cantonese I am becoming, which is a weird thing. And that I express it in my songwriting as well.
Okay, so let's touch on that a little bit, because I mean, we can journey, you know, I'm going to try to travel with you through your music and your journalism and stuff like that. But let's talk on the cultural thing, because, you know, like I've been living on and off in Asia for about 2 years, and there is, there's obviously strikingly different. I can use it all kinds of examples for either if I'm in Thailand or if I'm in India or anywhere I am, there's, you know, culture is different, and it's like, you know, it can get exaggerated how different it really is from the West. When you say that you find yourself becoming more Cantonese, is this something that you're, because you think you're holding on to, is like Europe kind of enveloping you as a European and you're kind of holding on to your culture, or is it bringing something out in you culturally?
That is such a big subject and I don't even know where to begin. It is something I am more and more aware that I don't want to let go, and more discover that the reason, the place that I was so anxious to leave at the beginning after university has become the place that it's just, I recognize it now. It is my only home, only hometown, or only root. And
it's
even
your true
I feel,
home.
Yeah, my true home. Even I do settle down in London at the moment. Don't get me wrong, I feel really comfortable here, but it's just not the same. And that I have had peace with myself.
So this is a little bit more intrinsic than just homesickness. It's literally that maybe, like, you know, maybe the architecture, maybe the way the air feels, maybe the way that food tastes, or how you right, or like how, you know, the how you shop for groceries, or maybe it's just like actually the physical environment that's also stimulating that. So it's not much like being like, okay, for instance, for me, like I'm homesick because where I live in Canada is radically different from where I am right now. So it's like the Atlantic Ocean is very different
than
the Pacific Ocean.
Of course.
The air is different. The way architecture is different. Everything is so much different that it's like, I don't know if I would ever feel at home living in, you know, the part of
Asia.
That's
the outer factor, but I feel more in a personal sense and just very simple. There is nobody in this place has witnessed my growing up. That's just that simple. Okay. And if I pick up a memory from my childhood upbringing somewhere, or my starting to work,
it's not relatable.
That sort of things.
You know. You can't have
no,
a deep
exactly.
conversation about
exactly.
memories, experiences. Okay.
Yeah, all the friends I have here, I have made only recently. And yeah, including you, for example. So you only know this bit about me. That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. The interpersonal relationships, I guess, is what you're missing from where you grew up and versus, okay. So that, well, it's kind of sad, but it's also super interesting.
Don't be sad.
Life is sad. Come on. So what should we touch on first? Cause like journalism and, you know, obviously journalism and, you know, being a musician are two different careers, even though they might cross paths, they're completely different spectrums. Yeah. You know?
I can give you a brief, okay, now it's self-introduction.
Right, so here we go.
I picked up a guitar. It's actually a classical guitar, a very little one. Bought by my father when I was 4 years old. So I started to play the guitar when I was 4 years old. My father taught me. He plays the guitar as well. So from year of 4 to year of 11, I have been in the classical guitar world, playing some classics, and then sort of change. Participated in some guitar contest in Guangzhou, Guangdong Province,
I'm going to jump in and interrupt you sometimes. I hope you don't mind. It's just to kind of, like, when I hear something, I want to kind of extract some information.
Yeah.
When you say that you were learning classics from the age of 4 to 11, and you're growing up in the south of China, what kind of classics are you talking about? Are you learning Beethoven or Bach?
No,
or is there, it just kind of have its own?
Yeah, we have all the information. It's quite... simultaneous, quite synchronized at that time already with the world, because we have been not I wouldn't say synchronizing, but I mean Canton has been, if you go back to 18th century, have been trading with Europe, and we call that the window of the south of China, so we get information quite quickly from the world, from the west, and they got from us as well. So that's the exchange is quite synchronized.
Were you learning Western classical music? Okay. So
classical guitar is a Western instrument. It doesn't exist in China. And that is quite a funny thing to see at that time, I'm sure, that 4-year-old girl, and exactly as you see, from Southern Chinese land and learning a completely Spanish instrument. And about 16 years old, I started a sort of music radio programs was a huge influence in my upbringing. There were about two programs that hugely influenced me. They were a breeze for me during my high school. This nightmare before you went in the university entrance exam. I don't know if you have any idea, but that was really a nightmare. I would feel sick even just thinking about that now, back then, how difficult it was preparing the exams. But every day I was listening to radios, and mostly I developed my taste in jazz and through those two radio programs. And we also, and I, at that time, I there was the fashion of writing letters to radio DJs, and then I sort of started that. I also at the same time developed my journalist, that was a career, but I did start quite early my journalistic, I don't know how you call it, study or not, but I started about 10 years old. It was a school paper, but also developed into a city paper, a youth newspaper for Guangzhou. And I was writing for that newspaper since about 13, 14 years old, and acting as a music critic.
Okay.
So from 14 to 16, 17 years old, that was the time that I had a very close contact with these two, I would say in my eyes at that time, progressive radio DJ. Wrote to them in the name of interviewing them, but then became friends. Of course, they're much older than me. And yes, 10, 15 years older. And also a classical music radio program has been running, and I've been in contact with these people. And then one day, one of the music program, the DJ asked me to write a jingle for them, because they also knew that I had been playing music myself, but I never made my own music. So it was that, I think that was the time when everything started to get interesting, that I actually tried to compose my own composition.
And it sounds like maybe a light switch went on, maybe, right? Like, I mean, were you kind of like a closet musician then? Like, you were just kind of doing your own thing at home after, you know, because you had done some pretty interesting things as a child. But now, like, when you're interacting with the world and, you know, this music thing is kind of like, almost seems like a magnet, maybe. Like, you just can't stay away from it. Like, with the music, you know, the radio station and people you're meeting, and it kind of is like calling to you. And then someone says to you, hey, oh yeah, you play, you know, you play music and you do this, can you write us a jingle? Like, that's kind of right out of left field, right? And I mean, like, that's not something that if I was talking to someone like, oh yeah, I play guitar, they wouldn't say, oh yeah, well, write me a song. I mean, that's kind of, it's interesting how this is happening, right? So
it's actually, I don't know about closet musicians. First thing is that it's when I there was a stage of the, as I said, the classical guitar stage. It sort of stopped before my graduation of primary school, because it sort of, I couldn't really choose my own path at that time. I was offered, actually, when I was 8 years old, there was a New Zealand guitarist, what's his name? Bartlett. Gray Bartlett. Yeah, he's still here around. He came to Guangzhou and he listened to my playing. I was playing on stage because I just won some prize in the contest and in the province, and he offered to be my teacher and do this and that. And I mean, looking back, I could see that would have been a different path for me. It would be the start of perhaps a professional classical guitar, a concert player. But I couldn't really choose my own path. My parents sort of steer me back to my terrible school assignment.
Okay, so your parents were with you, or were they more with you or against you in the proceeding? Like, how? What's
their perspective? They
were with
me. No, they were. Of course, they were with me, but they are also in a, I don't know. It's like
in a contemporary way.
Before we started recording this session, we're talking about this is all new. This is happening, the COVID, and then things are happening, not happening. So I think it's also sort of a similar thing. It's a strange analogy, but I know it is similar. They were with me. They were excited about what I have been doing. After all, it was my dad bought me the guitar in the beginning, but at the same time they were also sort of not sure, because traditional way children at that age should just focus on school matters and shouldn't focus on so much on the your own specialties. But it's strange, your own specialty, it didn't count as a, it's not the same as today, that you have a talent in something, music or something that makes you shine even brighter. But at those days, you just should be average and just focus on your school, that sort of thing. So they are kind of in a dilemma with me, but also worried that they are moving too forward.
Okay.
Does it make sense?
No, it makes sense, of course. I mean, it sounds like caution. It sounds like don't jump off, or it sounds like, hey, let's really examine the terrain here. So Mm-hmm. You write a jingle, you start getting, you know, you start feeling creative. You're like, oh, I like this. This is a good feeling. Yeah. Is this where you start pursuing it now? Like, you're like,
okay. I started to hate my parents.
What's that?
And I started to hate my parents because I realized, right. That, oh, you're this like, is
don't
something.
Don't bury me. Don't, you know, stop. You know, I'm going to rock and roll. I'm going to rebel. I mean, you're not going to rock and roll, but it still has this rebellion aspect to it, right? Like, you're, now you're kind of.
Who said I'm not going to rock and roll? Who said that?
Right, right. I didn't. Or I did. You didn't. but there's an aspect here of you igniting a creative source. Is that the, you know, the, is this the start of it? Or that's why I said closet thing. Like, were you kind of fooling around with your own ideas before?
At a point
where you were thinking, hey, I want to do something with them, though. Right? Like, you want to...
Yes. I think that probably is how a lot of songwriters started. It is when they had the first breakup.
Maybe.
So that is how I started. It's very simple. It's because that was the first time you felt something, the world is unbearable and you need a way out, and naturally you would look for that thing, or naturally your inner self would just clutch on that thing that closest to you,
hold on
or
to it,
matters
right?
to you the, or,
right.
yeah, or you can actually express yourself most accurately, should I say. But of course we are not conscious about that,
right?
But it just feels natural.
So let's start hopping here. So let's start like getting our time machine and start moving. So you do the jingle, it works out, you're having more conversations. What's going on? When did you decide, hey, I want to record an album? And at that point also, when does journalism start coming into the picture? So let's go there, like where you start, when you start telling
journalism.
Yourself, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be
famous. No, that wasn't happening because I didn't tell me that. No, I didn't tell myself that because I still thought that is not what I was pursuing in my career, because I was pretty clear in my mind that I like journalism, and it was also natural in me, but also unnatural because I'm quite a shy person, and that is quite a paradox. I like to chase people around, but I don't like to talk to people. I don't know that, but maybe I find that quite challenging and interesting, and just like it. And to speak to people and to inspire myself, I find that it's very interesting. And there was an opportunity, sort of travel to Beijing, and I liked Beijing a lot, and then during my university study, and coming home, and I really wanted to leave because it was always the same four seasons. There's no winter, there's always very green and very warm, and now that is something I miss, you see. But at that time I desperately wanted to leave somewhere like that. I live for whole life, and I just wanted to move to Beijing where there were four seasons. There are still four seasons, very different, and I've never seen snow in my life before
at that point, right?
Yeah, so things like that.
So Beijing is where your life started unfolding, right? Is this where your
because
journalism
was,
came into focus, your music came into focus?
Yeah, so yes,
when did that happen? And let's talk about, did they intersect
after university?
Okay.
Yeah. After university, as I said, I wanted to move away, and then I found a job opening.
What did you major in? What did you walk away from university with a major in literature, or what were you?
It's English literature.
Okay. So you were also very much involved in the English language and learning the English language. You must have read a lot of the
Yeah, I love literature.
Okay. So you
not sure about Shakespeare.
Okay, maybe not.
Not a big fan.
Maybe Dan Steele or something.
I like more modern things. I think you went to school, you went through all those romantic things, but then I find your own things. Right. Yeah, moving on. And so there was a job opening, and I just grabbed that, and it was really lucky. I was really lucky because that is my only job and my first job. And
you still have your first everything. Job.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sort of.
Well,
it's just moving from full time to part time. That's all.
Right. So, okay.
But it's, yeah. You and win? That's a newspaper.
Okay. That's a newspaper. This is your adding university. Sort of, right. Okay.
I didn't, it was a new newspaper. It was also quite a revolutionary one in China in terms of politics. It was the first cross-provinces collaboration for a newspaper. And I don't think nowadays it is so free anymore. But moving on, it's a different subject now. anyway, so it was a really good, everything, it was so good. Basically started my life from that point and moving away from home, and it was difficult. I was quite poor, but I didn't want to ask money from parents, not at all. I mean, they are not poor. I was poor.
Right. And what were you doing? What was your journalism job? What's going on now? You're a journalist, and what are you doing?
I was covering what I was good at. I'm so good at classical music, jazz, and some interesting rock, pop, but that's my choice.
Was it you started, also, was it just focused on artists in China, or was it focused
it's always overseas, musicians coming to China. There are so many overseas musicians, artists coming to China to perform. And we started as a new newspaper in Beijing, but gradually developed into one of the biggest one and best-selling one. And so I had all the opportunity. Well, at the beginning, I had to introduce myself, calling all the PR agents who I am, and then they, after a few years, yes, you know how it works, and then they come to you instead, and then just present you every opportunity to ask if you would like to interview this musician or this artist, that, like that.
Okay, so that's a pretty big job to land, just coming out of university, and all of a sudden you have a special opportunity to go and travel and talk to famous people. Like, I mean, that's, when you say lucky, like, that's not lucky. That's like astronomically fluke, you know, like that's like, oh, here's a dream job. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's, I think we're like really underestimating exactly how big this was, because now you're talking also, it's a magazine that was being promoted, like, kind of like, you know, throughout China a little bit. And it's focusing mm-hmm. on not only classical music, but also pop music around the world.
So yeah.
This is big. And when I first met you, when I first came across you was, you had applied for Live at Heart Newfoundland. And then you said, oh, sorry, I meant to apply for Live at Heart Sweden. And I said, mm-hmm. no problem. And we worked that out. And then all of a sudden on Facebook pops up you and Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, I'm like, who are you? You know, like, what are you doing? Why are you hanging out with Jimmy Page from Led Zeppelin? And then you're like, oh, look, he gave me an autograph. And I sent it to like some of my friends back in Canada who are, you know, literally live and die by Led Zeppelin. And they were like, what the, and so, I mean, that's a big deal to someone from North America. That's a big deal from somebody almost all over the world that has any understanding of rock and roll music. So take me there. So how the hell did this happen? Like, did you have someone that you could contact at your office to be like, were they telling you, hey, you're going to interview Oasis, or hey, you're going to interview Led Zeppelin, or hey, you're going to, or were you chasing that down?
No, it's sort of because you have been doing this for quite a few years and people know you, and it's quite small, a tight knit circle in among journalists and editors in China, and also the media circle, and when this magazine, they were doing some features, they were also looking for a right person to do a job, to do the interview job, and somebody in London. So I think that not that many people fit that bill. So,
wow.
So they just reached me. And also before that, I was actually in China, but yeah, somebody just mentioned my name to somebody, that was a few years ago, interviewing Metallica. That was in France. Yeah.
Okay.
That was in France. So they just fly me to France to do the interview.
So because China, like this magazine wants to kind of let viewers know what's happening around the world in a sort of way. Because I think this is a travel, tourism, and also music magazine. Is that correct?
No, that's men's fashion sort of. We're talking about. Wait, are we allowed to speak the name or not?
Of course you can. You can say whatever you want on this. It's totally open talk. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a men's fashion magazine. So you were writing for the Beijing Times, and then you're also writing for a magazine. Yes.
Quite a few now, and now I'm also writing regularly for Financial Times China.
Okay, so are you basically sending in what you write and then multiple establishments are publishing it? Is that fair to say that?
No.
It's all separate.
They are all different pieces I write, and because it's my job, so it's like I want to talk about this. It's quite clear to me is that a job and a career, not career, a job and a something you really love or close or dear to your heart is music. That's different. I guess maybe that's one reason I was very clear when I was writing my own music. I didn't want it to be my career. A job is that I write for different publications, sort of tailor made for them, my articles. I know what they want. So I edit or I write in a way that
fit them. So that's a more mechanic. Yeah. You're saying even though you love journalism and these things, you know how to do it well in its operation. Like you know what the company is looking for. You're going to give them what they want in a mm-hmm. job fashion, in a mechanical sense. And with music, it's more of a abstract emotional connection with yourself and you know whatever you're doing. Is that the comparison you're trying to make?
Yes.
Okay. So let me ask you about this then. So like your music is quite alternative, right? Like, what I mean by that in the truest sense, it's not alternative like, you know, Soundgarden or something, but it's truly alternative to the norm because you're coming from a classical background and you're also focusing on a lot of like, you know, you're arranging the music and the harmonies that you're trying to overlay on top of different melodies. I mean, melody lines, I guess you could say. So it starts to have this like classical pop, mood, atmosphere, ambience, you know, kind of thing. I mean, you and I once were joking around trying to actually label what your music we thought. Remember that? I can't remember what we were saying, but we're calling it like ambient pop or classical ambience. I can't remember.
No, and that's no ambience. It's not or something or world music or something. I don't know.
We were
that sort of things.
I'd have to go back in the email. But so let me so I'm trying to get to something here. You're working with like probably the second biggest entertainment company in China besides Tencent, and that's Modern Sky. Like this is a gigantic.
I don't even know that.
What's that?
I don't even know that. It's the second biggest.
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, even when I did an interview with the guys from MIDI Festival, and the guy was just literally talking about how gigantic Modern Sky really is. You know, he was talking about I mean, like, you know, we're talking about how, you know, MIDI Festival has.
I think, yeah, for independent music, it is the biggest company in China. That is no doubt. Yeah.
Well, and they've also expanded into like building hotels and, you know, I mean, the festivals they have happen all over the place. Yes. And they're gigantic.
Yes, okay. The festivals, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to get at is that you're a famous journalist in China for All Rights and Matter, let's say, because the content you're providing is, I mean, on a Western level, you would be, you know, this is someone that works for Rolling Stone magazine, basically, like, mm-hmm. you know, the American Standard. You're mm-hmm. interacting with the most famous people in the entertainment industry. You're sending this back to China in stories. You're also working in the financial sector and tourism sector. And mm-hmm. I mean, you're really, I mean, you must be influencing or informing just millions of people, actually, which is kind of overwhelming to think about. And now you also have this like really alternative, unique, artistic art, music project that you are signed with. Like a massive, massive company that does an array of things. How did that happen? So how did you get the conversation with Modern Sky? And they're like, yeah, come on in. Like, you know, we'll put you in front of 50,000 people. How did that work?
That is also accidental.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Accidental.
You're hiding a genie somewhere. That's you're like, rub your magic lamp.
Well, it's about 10 years ago. About 10 years ago. So although I wasn't pursuing a professional musician career, I never really stopped music making. And so it happened that some of my colleagues, well, I have quite a lot of talented colleagues as well. They are into filmmaking, painting, and also music making. And so they're friends, and that's how we get to each other, get to know each other. So one colleague is connected to some friends who happened to just started a independent record company. And so because she knows I was doing something on my own, and I think she likes it or something, so she recommended me send my demo to them, and they liked it, and then we met, and then they invited me for a gig, which is quite a good one, in a venue that, you know, there's one things very different here in China, or the West and Europe and in China, is that we have very limited music venues, but each one counts. It's not like London, you have thousands of them, but not really, you play there, you're not really heard, but that limited maybe two or three music venues at that time, 10 years ago in Beijing. Because it's so few music venue, people would know about it, anything happened. So I played for a few times there, and then also invited to a few more. And so that's also, I started to, I decided to continue or pick up, what should I say, pick up my music making again, and to start my first album making. And so that's how it started. And Modern Sky, it's a connection of the producer of this small independent company. So the producer of this independent company also works part-time for Modern Sky as their producer, produced quite a lot of albums for Modern Sky. So one day the boss of Modern Sky just asked this producer if they would like to join as a sub label.
This is a really, I mean, I guess, you know, we're really kind of seeing in your story, like networks and people knowing somebody that knows somebody, and then, you know, how friendships work and how things can really start. I mean, depending, I guess, on how you place yourself or what that relationship means, it really sounds like things are created out of your experiences, just knowing other people, right? Like you had, like, it wasn't like you like made this album, then you were like shopping it and you're like, hey guys, I want you to listen to this and check me out. You know, like I want to come to, you know, you weren't like over the top trying to promote it and getting out there and buying marketing package all of a sudden. Like you met somebody and you just had a conversation about, you know, you and what you do and your friends. And they're like, oh, you know, I should just show this to this person. And boom, like you're, you know, on this, you're all of a sudden, you know, you get the opportunity to play in the Strawberry Festival in front of tens of thousands of people. Mm-hmm. Your journalist story is absolutely insane as well, where it's like, you're fresh out of university and you're like, you're job hunting. You're like, oh, that looks interesting. And they're like, yeah, okay, you're hired. And it's like, what? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it's
yeah, kinda, it's, but I guess yeah. We need to be good at my job as well.
But well, you're very good at your job. That's why you kept it. Right. And I mean, and your job expanded from there. It's not just because like someone was like, oh yeah, you're cool. No. You can have this job.
No.
I mean, you had the qualification and you do it.
I think the journalist job, that what keeps me going and I really liked it at the beginning, it was because it was a new newspaper and we were a bunch of really young people. It was literally, it's just like a university
campus. And you campus got to travel all over the world?
Changed.
You got paid to
No, it's not. It's not traveling yet. We haven't started to travel yet. At the beginning, It was really just about make something happen. And we have all of a sudden had a newspaper in front of us. We could influence people. It's quite strange that we are so young and what are we going to put on a newspaper? And I loved it so much because I had the freedom to influence people with my own knowledge and my preferences of music. And I also had the freedom to present to the editor, which and convince them that this is important. So what I convinced them, including I could
publish.
They had no idea who Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock, Dave Holland were at that time. But I was really into jazz already in my high school time. So I had to sort of educate my editors. So I told them, this is important. I have to go there and I need two pages.
Oh my God. Wow.
So that is really, really good. Some things like that. But it's,
I mean,
not
Lucy,
just,
I gotta jump in there too, because I mean, when you're, these people that you're talking about, these names that you're just, you know, choosing to talk about, these are people that had a gigantic influence in the music industry itself, with the westernized music industry. Like when you're talking about Herbie Hancock, like that's not, I mean, that might be someone that's even more important, let's say, than Jimmy Page. I know people want to kill me because of that, but honestly, because Herbie Hancock, like, I mean, he started it. He revolutionized how the American music industry operated, right? I don't know how many people actually know that, but you're talking about A&M and the creation of, like, you know, you're talking about the foundation of the entire music industry that unfortunately collapsed when Napster came out. But you know, these aren't small things you're talking about. This is things that have like changed the entire world. And you're at this newspaper and you're like, hey, you know, I want to do this and this is why. And you're ultimately convincing, because these guys are like, well, I don't know what you're talking about, but here's the money and good luck, you know? So, I mean, that's incredible. I mean, it's absolutely, like, it's fucking astonishing, to be honest. So what I want to do right now is I want to touch on your journalism career. So tell me about the people you've interviewed. Let's just touch on them and like tell me a few stories about that. And then I want to go back and intersect this with your music career, because I think where you're at making albums or whatever, I kind of want to dig into that on it more deeply and how you're thinking about it. So tell me about some of the cool things you've done in journalism. Like, just brag.
Where do I begin, Evan?
At the start, when it got cool. So Herbie Hancock, cool.
No, Herbie Hancock and Brian Eno, they were the two people that I interviewed when I was just started. So it was really, really cool because I was really, really young.
No, that's not really, really cool. That's like really, really fucking, fucking crazy cool.
Yes, it's but I think it was not about rapping it about it. It was really an experience, and I really learned a lot just from speaking to them. And
I bet.
Brian Eno, he remains one of the most interesting person I've ever spoken to.
Why?
Because he's not just talking about music. He's talking about, he has a really forward thinking mind, and he he's very knowledgeable about science, about human body, about human science, about the world, about nature, about art. Although he said he doesn't know, he doesn't play any instruments. And it's quite interesting. He did say that to me, that he also had the luck to get in the industry. Otherwise, he wouldn't know what he would do with his life, because he didn't really learn anything professionally, not in that way, not an academic person either. But yeah, I think if you ask me details, I cannot really pinpoint that. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I said he remains one of the most inspirational ones, it's just that idea of it's really forward thinking.
He sounds His like way a of social scientist. It sounds like a society scientist or something.
Yeah, for example, well, I'll give you an example. For example, that talking about art, and he would go to a gallery. That's what I remember, actually. He would go to a gallery. He would observe what people see in a painting, and he noticed that people would immediately, I mean, he would study the eyeballs, how the movement of the eyeball, and how that would decide people's eyes would notice a person first if there is a person in the painting. And from that, he applies to music. He would, for that reason, get rid of the vocals, because that's the start of his ambient, his music, his creation of ambient music, because he wants to try to get rid of the focal, the focus, the natural focus, which is vocal for listeners, and to see what happened.
Okay, tell me about some of the other, I don't even know, I mean, we could just have a conversation about that, to be honest. Like, we could just stop talking about everything and just talk about how, you know, eccentric and revealing and, you know, psychological, you know.
Of course, talking about others, but it's just, he's so different. His way of thinking, it's so different from everyone else. And Herbie Hancock is talking about, of course, naturally talking about his playing with Miles Davis. And then he's talking about how jazz music is constantly evolving. But again, I mean, details, I wouldn't remember much. It's so long ago. And then lots of classical musicians, but I don't think that is our focus here. But I think actually lots of them are the classical musicians that I interview with. Some of them are already not alive anymore. Also, of course, another jazz musicians that are not with us anymore is Chick Corea. That is his first time to Beijing. I believe first time in China, mainland as well. And I asked to interview him, where I was the only person asked to interview him, because nobody really knew who he was. Chicoria.
Chicoria, okay.
Yeah. And after 10 years, more people know about him now, but I mean in China.
Okay.
So, yes, and there are a lot of also, not just big names, but lots of jazz musicians I like, and I present it to my editor, and then and a lot of writers as well, Nobel Prize winners, Orhan Pamuk.
What? Okay, so this goes further than music. Like you were, I mean, these are people that are influencing the world. But I mean, it's big, and the thing is, it sounds like you're coming from a place because, say, if like, say the editors, like you're saying, hey, like you want to grab more readers, let me go and do this. Is that how you're kind of? Is this how this is working?
No, I wouldn't say that. If you want to reach more readers, because I wasn't really thinking about how the more, that is going to reach lots of readers. I was more thinking about at that time. I think we, not just me, but we were thinking about a lot if we should influence or sort of guide or educate people, or should we
expose them to other parts of the world?
No, should we, I mean, talking about the readers, our readers, we're talking about, should we just follow their taste? Should we under or overestimate them? I mean, we shouldn't over or underestimate them. But what are we talking about? I mean, we were so young, looking back, so we were just so arrogant. What we are to talk about, influence, educate people.
It's called, in Canada, in the part of Canada where I was, where my mother was born and raised, they call it full of piss and vinegar. You're so full of piss and vinegar.
But seriously, I felt a sense of mission, that it was my mission to introduce these artists that I know, I love, and I respect to other people, and because they're important. I don't really think about that if they like it or not.
Yeah, so there was no ignorance on your part. Like you had done your, you knew these people were of sufficient notoriety. Like you knew that there was something absolutely extraordinary about them, and that's why you wanted to talk to them. Is that fair to say that?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, I mean that's a pretty big point, right, Lucy? Like that's pretty big. Like you're absolutely conscious of what's going on. You're conscious that this is like, you're really on the, like the frontier of, like, you know, talking to the most, I mean, honestly, talking to the most famous people or the most influential people on planet Earth in some regard, right? In their own bubble or in their own industry.
I guess I would say I don't like to follow. Probably I probably prefer leading, not follow.
Right. Obviously. So
that's to summarize it.
I find that in your character, like I find a little bit, like, you know, especially in your music, and that's where we're headed to now, is that even learning about your story, like being a little girl, taking on the guitar, you know, through your father, doing these competitions. I think even though you're a shy person and you're a quiet person, there's something raging in you. Like there's some kind of tenacity that's like, you know, is very worldly or very powerful, that you're, you know, you set yourself in a position where it's almost like maybe, okay, so maybe you didn't intentionally get signed by Modern Sky, but maybe you did, because maybe you know how to, you know, you really have a really deep understanding of how to place yourself, or maybe a deep understanding of how things work. And I want to touch on your music about this, because now I'm not saying that you do, maybe it's completely unintentional, but maybe it isn't. And that's the interesting part. But when it comes to your music, like, how have you found the difference in, I mean, like you kind of went, it sounds like a domino effect, which means like, you know, one hit one and one hit one. And then it reached this person where, like, you know, it really kind of got very special. What is the difference that you found with your music being in Europe versus being in China? Can you talk a little bit about that?
What What do you mean? Can you repeat the last sentence? I didn't get that one.
Yeah. So your career in China versus your career in Europe. Like, can you talk about those differences?
Yeah, I don't really have a career in Europe.
Why is that, you think? Why?
Because it's a, I think network is very important, and there's a foundation of people and circles that you know, and it's just like it takes years for that to develop. And I think I'm still quite new in here, and that's the one main factor, I think.
Okay, so you just think it's a matter of time then until you meet? I mean, okay, so is it really that kind of generalized? Like, you're like, well, I knew lots of people in China, so that just connected the dots and got there. And
No, that's not what I'm saying. What happened in China? No. It's in fact now, I recently renewed my contract with Modern Sky. I am not renewing as part of the previous member of the previous independent record company anymore. I am signed with them as an individual musician. So they do want to sign me.
Right. I know that. It wasn't that you asked someone like, hey, can you be my buddy and sign me? I'm saying there's merit. There's merit to you being signed. Absolutely. I'm not trying to ever take that away, because there is merit. But the way that it happened is like, it's kind of interesting in how it happened, where it was like through people you knew.
It's not just China though. I know that.
But the thing is, like, when we're talking about Europe, is that you're like, well, I just have, you know, I've been here for, you know, I haven't been here as long, so I haven't met the right people. And I mean, fair enough in that sort of sense. Yes, because if you know the right people, then, you know, the right people can make the right things happen, so to speak.
No, I haven't yet. I didn't say it's a matter of time. I said that because, as I said at the beginning, it's a completely different in the outside physical world or inside world, inner world. It's completely unfamiliar here. So it doesn't matter how many years I have lived here. It would not be the same as in China. And what I said that in China, it takes time to develop. Do a lot of work and people know you, and that is at home. That's that home temperature. That's the climate there. I'm not saying that is going to happen here the same. Not at all. That's not what I'm saying at all.
Okay. So,
but you're asking why I don't have a career here, because no, that is why, because I don't.
No, I didn't say like, no. So yeah. So what I'm asking is, what I'm particularly asking is like, what do you think, you know, we're identifying there's a difference, and why you think there is a difference, you know, being in Europe versus
I don't know yet, because that difference doesn't apply to my current state yet, because it's
a work in progress, let's say.
Because I think we can only talk about those differences if we have I have been exposed enough here, but I'm not. So I don't think I can talk about that difference.
Right.
Because if I'm exposed enough, then I can tell you that people's habit of listening, people's taste, what's the preference, the songwriting, the way, this difference, I can tell you that, but I can't, because it's not existing at the moment. So
okay,
I cannot compare really.
Have you ever thought about like contacting, like, you know, one of these famous people that you know and being like, hey, you want to listen to my demo? Or are you absolutely drawing a line between those two worlds?
I'm not, but I think I will first make my music a bit better first.
Okay.
So I think I would first concentrate on finishing my the album first and to talk about others. I think we had this sort of this conversation a few times, is but I don't really feel natural at the moment yet to act as my own agent, at the same time to focus on producing my music. It's simply not enough energy. I need to, because it also doing that will distract me from being wholeheartedly doing what I'm doing. That's what I'm saying.
Right. And I think the thing is too, is that I think you have a really authentic love in doing your music, and maybe also your music is like, it's like your vacation from work or your vacation from life. Like it's where you, you know, you operate inside of your heart or inside of your soul, whatever kind of metaphor you want to use. And so that's, you know, that's, I, maybe the thing is that you care about it so much that you really want it to be at a point where you, you know, you consciously are aware that, hey, like, you know, this isn't ready yet. This isn't ready to be, you know, for what we're, you know, what we're talking about right now. So maybe in time it will be, or maybe you're going to, you know, start traveling down a different path musically. I don't know, but it is, it's just interesting to talk about, because it's, I mean, let's just face it. A lot of the musicians out there in the world, I mean, they're not, you know, they're not you, right? So, well, but not only that, but, you know, like they don't have the same worldly experience, or say the same, you know, grade of being able to interact with people, but also having like such a significant career in another country, or being so influential inside of another industry. So I think you're in an incredibly unique position. And I think the way that you're conceptualizing this and kind of relaying it, it's just such an interesting perspective. And I think you're the height of your awareness, like I think the height of your conscious awareness about how you're operating this is ultimately what's, you know, the most interesting part. And I do remember we talked about this stuff. I mean, this is like a year ago or 2 years ago. I don't even know, maybe a year and a half ago, maybe not. But the thing was, yeah, I was kind of knocking at your door and being like, what are you doing? Like, you know, like you're doing all this amazing stuff. Like just jump out the window already, you know, like you'll land, if you jump out the window, you'll land on your feet. And I think, you know, a lot better. There's some kind of something deeply got, you know, there's some deep intuition in you, or there's some really great understanding you must have over your own potential, let's say, or when you're ready to liquidate that potential kind of thing. So it's just really interesting. I think you come from a super interesting background. I think you've had super interesting experiences. And also, it's not just that though, like your music is really mindful as well. Like it's not like the music is music. Yes, it's emotional, or yes, you can listen to it, you know, while you are doing anything in the house, like you would any other music, but the music is also really conceptual. You know, there's a lot of conscious effort put into it. So do you want to talk about that a little bit, like where you're drawing influences from and then where that's headed?
I listen to a lot of jazz music. I don't know if that answers the question, draw my influences from. Also, I think I grew up listening to classical music, so sometimes I caught myself, because people often accuse me of changing my key, changing harmonies a lot of times, changing chords so often, so frequently. I can't catch up. And my musician sometimes, bassist, just like complaining, it's just so difficult to play. And then I realized after a while, because at the beginning I wasn't conscious about that. I realized that because it's the classical music's fault, because there are lots of complicated phrasing and chords, and I don't do it consciously, But when I think everyone, when they make music, at least something has to, they have to happy with it. So I am not happy with it if they just develop, unfold, and until the end, the same key and simple chords. I cannot deal with that. And also its lineage is not repetitive. So I don't have a sort of, how do you call that? Is it that something developed as a song, right? A beginning.
So you don't want to put it in a box, let's say, and say verse, chorus. It sounds like you're traveling down a stream. Like you're like literally streaming your consciousness. Well, which is a lot like classical music where it has movement, right? You're creating movement. Yeah. You're not creating pop songs.
So it's developed. I think, I can put in words that it's developing in a lineage way. It's not going back and forth. It's so that.
Okay. When we talk about stanzas in a poem, like it'll be A, B, you know, C, B, and then, you know, it'll follow a pattern.
And then A, B, come back. Right. And then A, B. And then that's where people can catch up. People can sing along, but mine cannot. You cannot do that with mine because there is no A, B. There is just A, B, C, D, F, G, H, just going on like that.
And is that so now when you're interacting with musicians and they're like, hey, man, like, come on, like, I can't follow this. It's going all over the place. And you're like, oh, well, you know, because it's fun.
Because it's fun.
Okay, fine. Right.
It's okay, because sorry. It has so to be. No, it's not to. It's not about showing off my skill or whatever.
No,
it's
not showing off.
Strictly, it's strictly because. Sometimes being creative also can be for the sake of being creative, but I'm not that. I am very strictly following my heart. I have to. Do it this way.
You're putting your brain into your art, or you're trying. Okay, so I know what you're saying, and I am trying to put it into words. It's kind of complicated, but you're kind of right. You're kind of you're not. And again, if I say you're writing a poem, then you're going to say, "No, I'm not doing stanzas." But you are. You're telling a story. You know, you're expressing something in a true way, in a true essence of expression. That you're not following any rules. Let's say now you're following music rules. You can't help that. You have to use notation. Mm. Things have to sound at least like they're in key, I guess, at least sometimes. It has to have a rhyme and a reason to that point. You want it to sound good. It's melodic. It's enjoyable, but you're not doing it mathematically. Okay. So you're not, you're not doing it in a contemporary way where it's like, verse, chorus, verse, solo, bridge, chorus, out.
Yeah. But isn't that what everyone would say, that find their own voice? I think in the true sense of this sentence, finding your own voice is not follow anything.
But and it depends, It depends how you talk about that. I mean, this is, and I don't, excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry about that. But this is where it gets really interesting, of course, because the thing is, if you follow your own voice to a point of only hearing your own voice, you might be the only one listening to it, you know, because of the fact that it becomes so personal that it's not even really, people will lose the ability to kind of,
maybe,
you know, the ability,
maybe
to
not
reference with it. Right. Exactly.
But you see, I think that is where, I will draw the line between, commercial merchandise and art. I think art is that even, that is extreme. I'm not saying that I do that consciously, that it is nobody listen to me, I don't care. But I think that is where the line is drawn. I think that's a recent thought that I keep thinking about lots of times. It is this very fundamental questions is what is art? And
Lucy, that's also kind of what makes you different too. And, you know, I'm jumping on you again and interrupting, I'm sorry, but This is kind of what makes you unique too. And the fact is that, I mean, music to a lot of people is commercial. It is a commercial marketplace, and you're just denying that, right? Like you're saying, no, this is my art. This is how I express myself. This is, you know, my expression of my being let's say.
I deny it as an artist who is making this art. I might not deny it when I am as a listener choosing my music to listen to. Okay. So I don't mean that I don't like commercial music, but when I am the artist, I don't want to make a commercial merchandise, right? Because as I said that I have made my commercial merchandise in my journalistic work, and music is one thing that I wouldn't. So I think that is quite clear, no?
It's absolutely clear. And I think it's absolutely interesting. And that's kind of why I'm, you know, jumping all over you in the conversation, is because I think like there really is a, this is kind of a black and white thing to you, right? Like, I think that in your world, when we talk about these two things in your life, which is your career and your career and your expression, I guess I could say, because I can't say your hobby. Like, I would say your career and your passion, but there's passion in your career too. So let's just really,
no need to summarize it.
But I mean,
it's black and white only existing when I am sitting in front of my computer or when I'm holding a guitar. That is absolutely black and white because I cannot think of anything else. I cannot at that moment when I am creating something from nothingness to something, I simply cannot think about someone else. That is black and white. But what is not black and white is when I finish this work, I can go out to the world. Probably I would sell myself or listen to my song. That is another story. But what I'm saying, yeah, I need to clarify that. That is where it needs to be black and white.
Well, maybe that's what makes you so interesting, or the character that you are, is that there's such diversity in how you're approaching these, you know, different parts of your life. Because I mean, I think it is, I listen to hundreds of bands. I always have to listen to music, and I, to the point where I don't even really listen to music in my free time. I listen to podcasts. Because I consume so much music on a level, and I have to always, you know, I have to try to be analytical about it as much as I can, and then try to, you know, decide yes or no or what I'm doing kind of thing. And so it becomes more mechanical for me. And that's very sad, because I come from a musical background as well. So that's changed the way I feel about music too, which is, I mean, it's hard to explain, but yeah, it's just not the same for me. So
when you're doing this, you don't need to feel bad, because that's your role. I think we're talking about different roles when we're being different persons. So that's just natural. I am sure most of the musicians, when they are making their own art, they feel the same. They cannot, except for people who just make music like product, but, well, even those people, I'm not saying anything negative about it, but I mean, even people selling music just like a product, I am sure there are moments they just cannot think of someone else, something else, other people or their audience. They would have only space for their personal creativity.
But I don't know if it's that simple, because what it sounds like is this. It sounds like some people paint inside. Okay, so there's a canvas on the wall, and some people, like pop musicians, are going to use a thin pencil, and they're going to stick to certain sections where they're drawing. And then alternative folk artist is going to go, and they're going to, you know, kind of make some kind of abstraction out of that. And then a jazz musician will do his own thing. But it sounds like you're not even painting inside the line, right? Like, you're just like, the canvas is there, but you're kind of painting all over it itself. And I mean, maybe that's, and I mean, there's a difference, because the thing is, like, when you're talking about being unbound in your creativity, right? Like, you're talking from nothingness coming into somethingness, which is extraordinary in itself, because you're literally talking about that the influence is unconscious, right? So you're not even trying to copy something. Like, you're literally...
No, definitely not.
Right. So this is... I mean, this is such, I mean, and the reason why I'm talking about this and I'm analyzing it and I'm beating it here is because it is kind of extraordinary. Like it is kind of a place where you're, it's gotta be a completely different mindset. Cause even as when I was a musician, I'm writing songs, like I'm expressing my emotions in the box that they gave me, you know, and I'm not, but the thing is, I don't have enough knowledge to kind of really travel outside of that box as far as you're going either, you know? So that really kind of stimulates my thinking when, because you come from such an in-depth classical background, maybe that's why when you're fusing these genres or when you're creating, maybe there's such an influence in that classical sense. Maybe you know your way around the instrument so well, you know, so how the modes work and you just understand how it's going to sound in your movements. Maybe that's why it's hard to put you in a box, maybe just because your knowledge is.
I think copying previous bands and your idols' music, I think there are stages. I'm sure I had the stage as well. I would like to sound like somebody, but that passed. I think it depends on which stage you are in your musical life. And nowadays, I would hate it if somebody said that I think the least thing I want to hear is somebody say that this music reminds me of that person. And I think I love lots of bands, and that's sort of, I like to think to myself that, I mean, often, I don't know, I like to write to myself, I like to talk to myself, but of course in my head that I know, sometimes I will make a decision for myself and or awareness or something. And not long ago, I am very clear about music that I make. I know that I don't want them to sound like any bands I like. I there is no problem of admiring a band, but influence should be subtle. You cannot, it should be not obvious. I think it's, for me, it would be a failure if people can hear some other bands very clearly in my music. That means my music isn't original. I think that is something I'm pursuing. I think true influence would be invisible, not obvious. You can't hear it.
I mean, and it's, you know, and I just kind of want to, I mean, I just, it's so interesting how you're proposing yourself. And that's why I just love to grab things and try to put them in a metaphor to better understand them. And I mean, it's kind of like how, if you read a book about, you know, say if you read a philosophical book and it's about existentialism, it's not about going and acting those things out, but maybe it just influences the way that you interact with other people in an unconscious way. Mm-hmm. So maybe, you know, everything stored in your unconsciousness is there from what you've learned and what you've loved and what you didn't love or whatever. And maybe that's all part of the how you're expressing yourself, maybe. Which is really, really interesting. And I think the thing is also, you would have to have such a massive grasp on your instrument, almost to a second nature, in order to even, you know, conceptualize operating in that sort of way. Like you would really have to have a mastery on your instrument. You would, because you would have to know that instrument the way that you know the privacy of your mind, you know, and that's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's something, that's a whole podcast in itself, maybe.
Privacy of my mind. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a, well, all right. So I'm going to wrap this up right away because we're almost hour and a half in. Tell me about some of the shitty interviews. Like what, did you ever have a really bad interview? Did you have one where you're like, oh my God, this guy's an asshole?
And I forgot it already. I think that is my mind. It's the ability that I maybe consciously train it for that purpose. It's just that something not really pleasant, I quickly forgot it because there is no need to occupy any energy in that at all. I can't really think of or remember any really unpleasant ones. I only remember that the unpleasant ones, they are just like pipeline products. They just don't really, they were not really there with me. They are just like answer machine, and so they're not really engaged. So it's an interaction. So that would make me not really engage either, because there's no point.
All right, and let's finish off with your music. Like, where are you at right now? Like, obviously, it's a process, but what are you doing with it right now?
The plan was to release this album this year, April, May. Obviously, it's going to be late, and I am halfway through, I think, producing it. So it would be, I think, pushing it to maybe early next year, I believe it would be better. Later this year, winter, not really a good time to release an album. I think my manager in China would say that, they have to think about this marketing factors as well.
That's fantastic that they're supporting you, you know, like you're living in England.
Yeah.
They're behind you. And I mean,
they're asking me when I can come back to China, because there are festivals and then they can talk about like concerts and theaters and things like that. I said, I cannot come back for maybe another year. It's been 2 years now. I haven't been back and I really miss home.
Okay. Well, in saying that, like, I'm going to keep an eye on your career there and where you're headed and what you're doing.
Okay.
It's just kind of interesting. So, thanks a lot for joining me today. Thanks a lot for talking to me today, doing this recording here. And
thanks, Evan.
There's a lot of
speaking with me.
Well, yeah, no problem. I mean, you're very interesting. So, that you compliment yourself in that way, right? So,
okay. Yeah, I just remember that the name of that magazine that interviewed Jimmy Page and Metallica for is Esquire.
Yeah, so that's a global publication as well. Like that.
Yeah, that's
gigantic. That's so gigantic. I mean, we could have a podcast just about your interview with who was it, Lars Ulrich, right? Or who did you interview from Metallica?
Just Lars and James.
Oh, and James. Okay, so that's a podcast in itself. But same with Jimmy Page. Like,
James is very nice and shy, and Lars is a little bit cunning. That's all I can say.
Cunning. He's like a fox. Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah, I like James a lot.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. He seems like kind of like a rough kind of guy, but you think
he's a soft bear. Okay. He's soft and he's very shy and he's very observant.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Okay, well, before I get even more, get more interested, we're gonna say bye. But thanks again, Lucy. It was a really nice conversation, and I hope to keep in touch with you, and I wish you all success in the future.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.